Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, hello. Here comes Amazon with the new package. Sorry, just watching the Amazon guy out the studio. I couldn't help it. In fact, I'm going to send that to Amazon right now because that's a hell of an idea for an ad. Anyway, I'll finish working on the rest of the song by the next podcast. We are sponsored by Mutiny Information Cafe, who has been helping us do the Munch Madness. If you've missed out, then I'm sorry. We are into the final four. Get your votes in before the cutoff and see who makes it to the final rounds. It's a heated competition. It's anyone's bowl at this point. Mutiny Cafe has been kind enough to join us in our quest to find out what cereal is dominant. Will Cinnamon Toast Crunch run over all of the competition yet again? They have floundered, they have stuttered, but is it enough to give up the championship? Only time will tell as we go into the finals. Cast your vote online or on the Facebook page, or if you want to go into Mutiny Cafe, order a bowl. Get in this. This is fun. It's enjoyable. Relive your childhood. Because at Mutiny, you got books, coffee, and pinball. The three essentials to life. And while you're doing all this, you can enjoy a bowl of cereal. Just saying. All right. Where shall we start? Well, I don't know. I think. I may not be right on this. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. My final thought on Halo. And I was thinking about this over the last couple of weeks. There's so much that has gone on. It's been literally a blur. We'll get to Ghostbusters. We've got some stuff going on that we'll talk about here in a second. Special events that will be at this coming weekend. But I was thinking about Halo, and I love how it ended. My final take on it is we get the Flood, which I think it's probably the creepiest part of the game. And that made me think even harder about the current situation with Halo. Because you don't need to really enjoy the game and all of that. Season 2 stepped out and of the shadow of the game in Season 1, in my opinion. And it created quite a connection with me. And I had to go back and I rewatched the final episode. And I'm even more on board with this thought process. Because over the years, we have had some pretty heated conversations in regards to them unable to capture a video game properly. You know, the story is missing, the special effects, the acting, whatever it may be, it has always fallen short of the mark. And to date, again, Super Mario probably reigning supreme in regards of an adaptation from a video game. And I might have to amend that. Because what we saw from Halo was inventive. It was creative. And as for its faults that I stated in Season 1, it seemed to kind of fade away in Season 2. I was much more invested in these characters. I was much more captivated by the story as we got further into the Halo lore. And you don't have to understand the game to understand what's going on. There are some politics that are involved and there's some character development that really is outside of the box. This is before Master Chief becomes the Master Chief. There's already alluding to his greatness. But the story as it has evolved with his other Spartans and with his other comrades and the new Spartans that they introduce for this is... I don't want to say inspiring, but it's neat. I like it. And from the pure standpoint of they're trying not to limit it and put the weight solely on the Master Chief. Because let's face it, you know, when you're playing the game, if you have, You go in there and you save the ODST guys, and usually they're cannon fodder. They maybe last a little bit. The problem is, when you're playing Halo, you're running so fast, and you're just, you don't care if they're behind you. They're not instrumental in the game. I mean, sometimes you have to save them, and you get points, and it just depends on which version of Halo or what update you're on with the ODST guys. But the aspect of the other side of the war and everything that's going on and leading up to this and finally getting to the Halo at the end is kind of an actual payoff, but then we also get a great cliffhanger. Now, the Flood, which I'm absolutely enthralled with, because we kind of get this horror element introduced at the very tail end of the story. And it's creepy as hell. I mean, holy crap. And to see them kind of capture that and to get a little bit more into the special effects and a little bit more into, like, the monsters that we have seen over the span of this franchise is encouraging. And I like that they're not ignoring it, and they're trying to integrate different things. Even the Orbiter, who is massive and imposing and just wow, and the different things that they've included in this whole story to go with the Master Chief, I've enjoyed it. It's been fun. And once I got around all of the game stuff in my head and wanting to relive it, I had to sit back and go, you know what, this isn't bad. It is actually enjoyable. It's fun. I'm eager for season 3. Do I want to see more Master Chief suited up? Sure. But I like the Master Chief also out of the armor and actually interacting with the environment and the players and everyone else that's involved with this going forward. And to just, you know, watch this is fun, because we never see this in the game. We never see him outside of the armor, of course, because the whole point of it is you're the Master Chief. You look into the visor, you see your face, you're the Master Chief. That's the whole point of the game. But to see them kind of expand on this character, show kind of the human side, if you will, to him and the development of the character, the fall of Reach, all of it just so well meshes together that, you know what, if I had disparaging words about it, season one, season one still kind of annoys me. But you know what? I'm on. I like the season two. I like the wrap up. I like the tight little Flood bow that they put on top of it. And give me season three. Pablo's great. I couldn't imagine someone else than him. Maybe Alan Richardson playing Master Chief because of just pure size. But both of these, well, Alan Richardson, but Pablo has proven to me he is the Master Chief. Long live the Master Chief. Now that said, let's move on to some current stuff. What's going on? I've got some thoughts and some things floating around in this old nugget, but first let's start off with Physical 100! Dude, I love this show. And I don't know why. I mean, I do know why, because I'm absolutely enthralled and interested in the human condition. I'm so just in awe of these people that have just dedicated their lives to their profession. Now, this year's a little different. They've kind of mixed it up with the challenges and just, you know, what's expected of them, and they seem to be, I mean, the first season, they seemed to kind of draw it out a little bit. And it looks like they've learned from their mistakes, and they've kind of shortened up some of the things. Like the first, you know, King of the Hill, first round, that seemed to go on way longer than it needed to. And they did kind of trim that down, and they cut it down to, you know, specific bouts that had some gravity to it, some weight, and just good frickin' fights. I mean, the one that, again, we do get, like, the kung fu versus karate or judo face-off, which was epic, and just see this. And I know I've said multiple times, and I am going to continue to say, I am not a fan of reality TV, but I have found myself down this particular rabbit hole, actually two reality TV rabbit holes right now that I can't get out of. And Physical 100 is one of them. I love everything that they've got going on. They did break up the season, which was nice. So they kind of released it all in installments, and I think they finally released the final few episodes. I'm up the point where I lost one of the guys that I was cheering for, and it was in one of the team events, and I knew that was probably the only way that guy was going to get eliminated. Broke my heart, made me sad. I know Red and I have been discussing it, and I know she's got her champion, the one that there's a couple K-pop stars in here too, and it's fun to see all of these walks of life come together. There's a football player, there's gymnasts, there's the cross trainer, there's the models. Some of them it's just like, okay, I can appreciate your vigor. It's like American Gladiator style. You think you can get in there and do it and succeed, and then you realize, oh, I was not prepared for what I just had thrown at me. And the boxer guy who I'm so adamant, I just love this guy. He just he's a boxer. He just shows up, and you know, the man is just pure blunt object is basically the best description I could come up with. But I'm really, and what also kind of pulls me into this is the challenges. I mean, the things that they come up with, you would think is just kind of like, eh. But when you get into watching the competition, the competitors getting in there and trying to win, and I find myself, I mean, it's almost worse than watching like football, you know, or hockey, when you're into the game and you find yourself just kind of like moving and like, oh, you know, enacting as a player. So then when you're watching Physical 100, I'm doing the same thing. I'm fidgeting and I'm kind of like, oh, why don't they do this? And you start thinking of a strategy, and I'm even sitting there thinking, okay, what would I do if I'm in this role? What would my strategy be? And sometimes I'm on point. Sometimes, and then it also comes down to what's the saying? It's not the dog in the fight; it's the fight in the dog, and that's really a lot of it. There's moments where I see these people just absolutely emotional, breaking down, and just distraught, thinking that their world has literally been shattered. They think they've got it. They don't see anyone as their equal. And to have that realization set in, to have the defeat and just the emotion, it's a raw emotion. You can't, I mean, of course you can fake it, but when you're watching this, you can see that these individuals have committed to this competition and have thrown in completely, not withholding anything. There's no barriers. It's all out there. Some win, some lose, and how they deal with it is, it's educational, and it's interesting, and it's insightful into the human psyche. And I think that's probably one of the best things that I like about it. Not only just the challenges and all of that, but just the utter breakdown of people, good or bad. So I'm totally in for Physical 100. I'm glad it came back. If you haven't started watching it, please do. Don't let anyone talk you out of it. You should experience the Physical 100. Not to say that you won't like it. I don't know. I would love to hear your thoughts. Who are you cheering on as the onset at the end of the first elimination? You can kind of like pick who you want, because at the beginning it's hard. They just throw all these people into the room and systematically just kind of knock people out. The sizing up, and you know, sometimes they're just the egos involved. It's hilarious. And you know, the people, again, the dubbing is horrible. It is the cheesiest thing, and there's some repeats like over and over. You're like, okay, they take different angles, and the audio is obviously attached to it when they do the cutscenes, so you can tell that it's happening simultaneously through the entire scene, but there's different angles, and it's just, it's fun. I've enjoyed the hell of it. Who are you cheering on? I'm about halfway right now, and then I will be done with the Physical 100, and I'll let you know if I picked the winner or not, which is, It's a big ask. In other news and updates, the legend, the man, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who, you know, I just think is absolutely amazing, had a pacemaker put in. I didn't even know. I know he's had heart issues in the past, but evidently Arnold Schwarzenegger has a pacemaker now. The key to this story is, one, he's fine. He's doing great. And, you know, he posted up on his Instagram that he's doing well. But the comment is what caught my eye of, don't worry, this will not get in the way of filming FUBAR Season 2. Are you kidding me? Awesome! Okay, now, FUBAR was amazing, okay? It was like True Lies, but a modern version. And the series was awesome. Arnold Schwarzenegger, secret agent. Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter, secret agent. They don't know they're secret agents until there's a mission. And it just was so well done, so well written. Absolutely loved it. Left on quite a huge cliffhanger. I wasn't sure if the ratings on this one translated, though. I mean, it's Arnold. I mean, I know not everyone loves Arnold, and if you don't, I don't know why, because the man's great. But the fact that they're doing season two, I'm just even more excited. They even had Tom Arnold in there, which such fan service, especially when they bring him in to do what he does. And I don't want to give you any spoilers. If you haven't watched FUBAR Season 1, absolutely must watch, because I just, it's spectacular. There's no anything about what FUBAR Season 2 is going to be, which is fine. I don't need to know. I don't want to know. Let's face it. Let's look at it from this point of view. I don't want to know. This is gorgeous and amazing and just so perfect that I heard that. And again, Arnold Schwarzenegger, pacemaker, our hopes, our prayers, our dreams, our energy, whatever realm you're in, shoot the positive towards Arnold. Just so a speedy recovery. I know that that's not the easiest of surgeries to deal with and to get around, but once it's done, you do pretty well. But go Arnold, and looking forward to season two of FUBAR. All right, what else have we got going on? So there's two other shows that I'm currently in, and I'll glaze over one a little bit. Actually, I can dive into both of these, because I like this. So first one that I got derailed with is the three body problem, which I kept mispronouncing and naming it something else, and the three body dilemma, the triple dipple nipple, or, you know, it just constantly, I couldn't wrap my brain around the title. And when I started watching this, it felt like a Doctor Who episode mashed together with an NBC, you know, apocalyptic series, like We Fall Down a Hole and Go Back in Time, whatever the hell that show was, and the planes and, you know, the 100. And it just really seemed like this interesting mashup. And the characters and everyone involved in this series, I mean, it's a cornucopia of, like, different series. We've got Game of Thrones. We've got Doctor Strange, and we've got Baby Driver, and all of these people who have been in these other projects come to play. I mean, this series, as wild as it is kind of, I mean, it's fun. I'm trying not to, like, pick things apart, and it went the way I kind of thought it was, and I haven't been, like, surprised, but at the same point, I am. The show has been spectacular. It's only been 8 episodes, and I'm in, I think, at episode 7 at this point. I stopped. I wanted to, like, gestate, because I almost binged the shit out of this one. This was almost binging the shit out of Worthy, because I got into it, and the characters and how they develop them and the storyline as it progresses is absolutely mesmerizing. You get into it, and there's a lot of drama. There's a lot of connection, and I like the camaraderie between the the characters. You know, it almost has kind of a Breakfast Club feel where, you know, everyone went to college together and they're in kind of like the same sphere together and they cross over, but they all have their own separate identities and their careers and everything that kind of goes with it. And again, it does feel very Breakfast Club, Doctor Who-y, NBC, you know, thing. And I'm curious, as I've been watching, because again, I cut off at episode 7, how this progresses, how this leaps to the conclusion of the story. And there's no way they're going to wrap up this in any particular fashion quickly, especially with the timeline that they have suggested that the plot is going to take to complete. So it makes me wonder if we're going to get kind of like an Altered Carbon style of storytelling where we leapfrog, that all these characters that we have come to enjoy and throw in with are not going to be around for season 2, that we are going to advance this story, and it would only make sense. And I'm curious to see if that's the direction they're going to go. And if so, I'm even more intrigued to see how this story progresses, because the vision and everything that I have seen for this series and show so far is wow. Okay. Totally out of left field. There are so many different elements involved in this storytelling that you wonder as you're watching it, how they're going to pull this all together. How do they tie it all up? And it's through the strength of the characters. It's the strength of the writing and how they bring this together so far. Like I said, I don't know. I'll watch the final episode. But so far, the cinematography is great. The acting is so on point. But then what do you expect? You have these bona fide just superstars of dramatic acting, character actors that just commit to the role. They commit to the lines. They commit to everything that is asked of them for the role, and they deliver spot on. And I can't... I'm almost sad that it's 8 episodes. I'm really wishing that they could go like 12 on this and get the story completed, because as much as I'm excited that they'll probably be more, I want it all now. Again, greedy nerd. So, there you have it. Watch it. You'll like it. At least I will. At first I was wondering what the hell was going on. Anyway, also, X-Men 97 is on Disney Plus, and at first, I'm still kind of on the fence on this. It picks up immediately, and everyone thought this was like a new launch. There's been a lot of questions that people have asked me about the show, and I don't think the marketing for this has been spectacular, and I know everyone's been trying to push it, but I think there's been a lot of confusion as to what this is. And through that confusion, people have been hesitant to get in and watch it. And of course, it only comes out on Wednesday, the new episode. They didn't drop all at once, which kind of is off-putting, but that's Disney Plus, and you know, having a weekly installment to bring people back is not... I'm not opposed to that. I'm fine with the weekly episodes. It gives me time to watch other things. So the X-Men 97 continues where the cartoon left off years ago, in 1997, hence the name. So far, it's been a very interesting mashup of cartoon and comic, actually. It's actually very reliant on the comic book stories. And I know in the past, they kind of tried to reference different things in the comic, and different ideas and storylines and things like that. But I don't remember being this reliant. The premiere episode, the first two episodes that came out, were definitely ripped right out of the comic. In fact, it's issue 200 of Uncanny X-Men, The Trial of Magneto, and that whole storyline. I mean, right down to the Executioner and the birth of Baby Cable, or like we like to call him, Nathan Summers. And it really is, I mean, damn. even down to like the costume, the lines. There were some things that I thought we might see. And Zach pointed something out to me that there's a couple of scenes with the Morlocks that could have indicated that we were going to get a different storyline than what we did, and especially with Krakoa and Genosha and all of that, which I think is coming. So, and especially with what happened in the latest episode, which is they're following the comic almost exactly. Almost exactly. There are some liberties and characters that probably aren't available that they haven't introduced, but it does follow the storyline of Cable as far as history has dictated from issue 200 to 201, even down to Storm losing her powers, although it's kind of late because she should have lost them earlier. But the circumstances in which they happen and how they happen definitely set this up. So, and I'm very interested to see how they pull this all together, because this week's episode, we do get the Goblin Queen, which, again, is the Inferno storyline, but Madeline Pryor, which is the clone of Jean Grey, was there, and that they, again, went through that whole storyline damn near verbatim from the comic book, except for, you know, the over-revealing under-boob costume that the Goblin Queen sports in the comics. Yeah, I think that was just a wee bit too risque for Disney. Come on, everybody likes a little under-boob. but the story itself is very reliant on the comics. So here's the thing. And if you haven't watched it, spoilers, I'm sorry. The story is decades old. Cable gets infected with the techno-organic virus, and to save him, they send him to the future where there's a cure for the techno-organic virus, thinking that he will never return again. And, of course, Bishop scoops him up in his little X-blanket and goes to the future. And then later, Cable comes back, but then Cable already makes an appearance because of the time travel thing, and it's really, yeah, it makes your eyes cross. So, here's the thing. Cable in the cartoon has already come back and has done the things and stuff, and I liked how they kind of wrapped this around and made it all kind of fit together. The Goblin Queen story with Mr. Sinister is an entirely different take. And the Inferno story, which this is kind of loosely adapted, there are some elements that are from the comics, and I like that, and I appreciate that. But the Inferno storyline, I actually really like. So it raises the question, especially when they start setting up these storylines, because it looks like we'll see Fall of the Mutants. It looks like we'll see the Extinction Agenda. It looks like we'll see Inferno, but then Inferno has already kind of, like, happened. So I don't know. And then the big one, which I think is probably between Fall of the Mutants and the Mutant Massacre, those are probably my two favorite X major arcs, huge events, sub events. I don't even know what to call them anymore because they keep mixing them up. But they are these overarching stories that have massive impact on the characters in the story, and it's a huge buildup. The Mutant Massacre is exactly what it sounds like. The mutants get destroyed, wiped out. The Morlocks in the tunnels underneath New York are just slaughtered and go into hiding, which with whoever is left. The casualties are kind of high on even on the X-Men side, because we see Colossus, Nightcrawler, and Kitty Pryde all effectively neutralized at the end of the story. So it's impactful. And the Fall of the Mutants, which at the end of this new episode, we get introduced to Forge. And now we see the guy that's supposed to help Storm get her powers back, but also opens the door to the Fall of the Mutants and the introduction of the Adversary. And I'm not completely caught up on the older cartoons. I don't know if we've visited this story. I don't know if it's been thought of. But to see where this is going for the Disney Plus side, I have some excitement. I have some thoughts of, ooh, this could be good. I know it's only like 30 minutes, and a lot can be covered in 30 minutes. But these stories are major standouts, and I can hope that we see them expand on them a little bit. And I know, like I said, my favorite one by far is The Fall of the Mutants. It puts the X-Men in a very interesting space. But the problem that we have is that half of the characters that are part of that storyline are missing. And that, I think, takes away from it. I do like they have the friction between Magneto and Rogue, which is, again, another storyline that Magneto and Rogue are stuck in the Savage Land. So obviously that's happened, and we're left to extrapolate on our own as there's romance and deception. Da, da, da. But I do like that they're taking specific stories that have been proven, that have had success and the fans like, and I know they have to do a little modern day twist, and I'm encouraged and excited to see if they actually pull it off. I fingers crossed, I think they can do this. I have hope that they can do this. And every week I'm going to tune in. I'm in, if anything, just to see the train wreck or to applaud the success. Either way, I'm going in open-minded, hoping that I'll see something that I like. And I hope we even get like a trip to the Mojoverse. That would make me absolutely freaking happier than hell. All right. One of the major stories... this, and then we'll move on to my next one, because I got like two good rants out of this week, and some very interesting and maybe scandalous words. Maybe. We'll see. But it won't be out of this story. But actually, it might be, just simply because of what I read recently. Now, if you haven't been keeping up in the horror world and what has become... I would say like the new golden age of horror. There have been some great stories. There's been some bombs, but like the big standout, Thanksgiving, was a huge hit for me. Absolutely loved that story. And I know they're doing a sequel and all of that, so I'm excited to see what else comes out of it. Now, the other one that I'm on the bubble on this one. It all started when things started hitting public domain. And this is basically when patents and copyrights dissolve and there's the ability. There's been a huge ongoing fight about Steamboat Willie and what you can use and what you can't use from the Mickey Mouse standpoint of public domain. One of the characters that hit public domain was Winnie the Pooh. And the story, I mean, like, it was almost like they had... already filmed it, everything was done, edited, because as soon as Winnie the Pooh hit public domain, Blood and Honey hit the screens. Now, I was... okay, it's scarring. Let's just put it that way. And as much as I love horror, I was unsure if I really liked Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, because the thought of Piglet and Pooh... eating Eeyore was a little off-putting, okay? I just can't wrap my brain around that, because it's just so horrific. Especially when, you know, one of my favorite films of like the last few years has been Christopher Robin with Ewan McGregor, you know, running around with Pooh, and as they're trying to, you know, save his kids. And it's just like this heartfelt moment of just pure happiness. And then on the other side of the coin, you got, you know, Winnie the Pooh throwing a chicken to a wood chipper. That's not very Pooh-like. But the public domain is ripe right now with characters. And out of those characters, it looks like, and this is what caught my eye, the Pooniverse Monsters Assemble. It's a project that is going to kind of link all of these horror realms together, very Avengers style. And this is what I've read from an article. It's an ambitious crossover will succeed a handful of movies scheduled to release in the near future, including, now get this, sit down, prepare yourself, because this is, I'm curious, okay, here we go, just sit down, prepare yourself. Characters that include Bambi the Reckoning, Peter Pan's Neverland Nightmare, and the forthcoming Pinocchio Unstrung. Of course, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey has a sequel that's coming out, but these other movies have been attached to it. So we're basically getting kind of like a Grimm's fairy tale Disney darkness reckoning is the best word that I can come up with, because Bambi the Reckoning is just not... I don't even want to envision what this is going to look like. So does Bambi go after the hunter? Does Bambi wait for people to come into the forest and systematically eliminate them? Excellent questions. I don't know. But the Peter Pan's Neverland Nightmare, that one actually has me captivated. That one has my interest. Only because Fables, which is a comic book that I absolutely adore, created Pan as the villain with Tinkerbell in their latest story arc. And it was so well done, and how it presented and how it read and Bill did an amazing job, a spectacular job. So I'm captivated by this. This idea really kind of like, okay, this could go really dark and might be really enjoyable. The Pinocchio... just, I don't know. Again, back to the disturbing image of Pinocchio running around. Is he a real boy? Did he get turned into a puppet? Did he not make it to a real boy? All of these questions are just fishing around in my head, and I'm very, very anxious to see what they come up with. Now, as things go on, Scott Chambers of Jagged Edge Productions, he's the one, he is the brain trust behind all of this. He was quoted saying, "We aspire to create villains, Avengers, stacked with iconic horror figures like Freddy Krueger and Jason. While that exact dream is unattainable, we're producing our version. And that's the birthplace of the Pooniverse monsters assembled." And I applaud them for thinking way outside of the box. I mean, I can see, like I said, Peter Pan, no brainer, easy horror film waiting to happen. Teenagers dying, perfect. Kill pirates. That makes absolute sense. And maybe it's Peter Pan, you know, abducting adults and taking them to Never Never Land and tormenting them or torturing them or whatever, or maybe saving children that are being abused. I mean, it can go a lot of different ways. So the Peter Pan one makes sense to me. It's the other two that I'm kind of like, a little shaky ground. So I'm very leery of how they're going to put this all together, but I'm at the same point very anxious to see how the strings come, how the strings get pulled, if you will. Now, in the new Blood and Honey, Chambers is set to return as Christopher Robin. And that is great, because I really do like... I really do like the characters that they put together for that film. It's just really interesting. Now, what they're adding, however, is... because we only saw essentially Pooh and Piglet, and we know Eeyore didn't make it because when they were starving, they ate him. They have said that Tigger is another character that they are going to be introducing into the new Blood and Honey. So take that as you will. We also get Megan Plactico as Wendy Darling from Game of Thrones, who will be in this version as well, or this sequel. And it will supposedly, now this is going to hit theaters. This isn't going straight to streaming. This is a theatrical release in 2025. And I guarantee you all of the PTA members are going to be outside with their picket signs saying, "No, no, this is not our poo." Now, the quotes are further to go on as far as what the Pooniverse, what we can expect to see from it. And the characters like Winnie the Pooh and Bambi, Peter Pan, and others are set to battle it out, monster versus monsters style scenario. So I don't know exactly what that looks like as they introduce these different characters in their own films and they start crossing over. So we'll see what happens and how they do that. I'm sure they're already trying to figure out how to get all the filming done and get this groundwork laid out and go that route. I'm not sure Winnie the Pooh was meant for this, but a killer bear who has a proclivity for honey is definitely on a short stack for horror. But I'm curious what you think, because I'm of two minds of this. This could be really great, and this could really suck. But if you haven't seen the first Poohniverse, or the first Blood and Honey Winnie the Pooh, go check it out. I think it's on Freeview? I don't know. I know it's out there floating around in the I think it might be actually on Amazon. So go check it out. Let me know what your thoughts are. Maybe I'm wrong, and this is just going to be one gigantic train wreck, but something I thought I'd share. Oh, hell no. Okay, this was just handed to me. This can't be true. No? Okay. All right. This just handed to me. Get ready for Velma Season 2. Why? This is horrible. Okay, I'm sorry. This is bullshit. This series was wretched. This was the absolute worst thing, and I know nobody watched this. Velma Season 2 premiere date for HBO Max. This show was just... I don't know a person out there that liked this show, and I have no idea why we are seeing this. Evidently, Season 2 will be premiering on Max April 25th. So if you're not aware of Velma, it was on HBO Max, and it was one of the largest animated debuts on HBO Max. And that's probably because everyone thought it was going to be something it wasn't, and it fell short of the mark in every category, not only in my opinion, but a lot of other nerds that I spoke with. I'm not the only one that looked at this, shook their head, and asked why. Scooby-Doo isn't even in it, and it just is a train wreck of writing. And I don't know who decided to bring this. I don't know why they decided to do this. And I won't be watching this. I will not be tuning in to just see the train wreck. This is one that I am going to look away. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's some validity to the storytelling or the characters, but it just missed the mark on so many things. It wasn't even funny. There was no humor. It was bad jokes, bad writing, and it really was just punching down on a lot of unnecessary commentary, in my opinion. But if you liked it, good on you. Let me know what you think of Season 2, because I'm sitting this one out. And on to my final... Yeah, you can keep that note to yourself. I'm not going any further into Velma. Sorry, my producer's trying to like give me notes, and I'm like, no, I'm not having any of it. No, 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 no. Forget it. Moving on. Final thoughts. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. It was a whirlwind of adventure. We end up going to New York for the red carpet premiere. And this was a rushed decision. It was, are we in or are we out? Are we in or are we out? We're in. And nothing had been laid down. No plan. No plan whatsoever. And over the course of hours, we orchestrated not only a plan, but execution, figured it all out, and with days to spare. So when the day finally approaches, we're on the plane, we fly out. I'm a little late because my plane is delayed, but the rest of the guys are out there. We go to the red carpet premiere. It is probably one of the... I'm going to put this in here with one of like the top five moments of my life. I know I'll never get this opportunity again in my lifetime. And if I do, I will consider myself fortunate. This was a dream come true, not only from the standpoint of just being there. And I love a trip. Any excuse to go to New York. Absolutely, I'm in. But to be there under this mission, you know, to go see Ghostbusters, I nothing but happy thoughts from when I first saw the film in 84. And yes, I saw it in the theaters 12 times, and it was and has shaped a lot of, you know, my favorite fandom. I know everyone is like usually so many different films of that era, but Ghostbusters, I have been and always will be a Ghostbuster. All right. So to go to New York to be in the moment, to experience this, was truly inspiring. And not only to just be there with other fans and to see the celebrities and to be involved with this whole process and the pre-party and to talk with everyone, but I got to share it with my friends. And that was probably one of the higher points of the trip. It's strange to say that, I know, but in this wild, wild world of cons and events and things, you never get to share events and moments with your friends. I mean, you go do these cons, you go to them, you attend them, and there's always something to do. There's some line to stand in. There's something to that needs to be done. But to share it, to actually be in the moment, to sit back and just be the first time to share with your friends, it's amazing. It's fun, and I don't get it nearly as often as I would like. Life happens while you're making other plans. So to be able to go to share this with my friends and to sit back at the end, have a cocktail, and just discuss and to relive the night and to talk with other fans and just, hey, did you see this? Hey, what about that? And just to have that moment is priceless to me anyway. The film itself, as we come back, and again, I've already seen it like I think 4 or 5 times, and every time is something new. And it's in the next couple of times after the first viewing is more dissemination, more, and I don't want to say picking apart, but you start, you know, catching things and putting things together. And I'm going to release some potential spoilers. If you haven't seen it, I apologize, but it's been a couple weeks and I want to get this out of my mind. I want to get this out into the ether, out of the webverse. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is great. It is the perfect sequel, and we do acknowledge the passage of time. There is a leap from Afterlife to this. They acknowledge it, and they move on. There's some interesting things, and I think that the original version of this film, and I say it that way just simply because there were reshoots and all of that, and I think it changed the direction of what they put out on the screen, because I think they killed off a couple of characters. And it's evident if you watch the film of how they kind of are there and then they disappear, but they haven't died. They haven't gotten taken out. And I think in the original trailer, we see them done, kaput, end of series, okay? And then the reshoots happen, and there's a lot of, I wouldn't say disjointment, but what we've seen in trailers and all of that doesn't all happen in the film. And I know there's that always happens, that, you know, they'll do a trailer and then, you know, whatever we saw doesn't end up on the screen, or some variation. But I mean, not even a variation. There were some drastic changes. So I think they had originally done one thing, decided against it, and flipped the script, fixed it, and decided not to go down that road. The film itself is, I left the theater happy and excited and just like, okay, that was good. The science, knowing Ghostbusters and as being as, I don't want to say connected, but as interactive as I am with the lore, there are some things, there's some shortcomings, and I'm like, I don't think the science of that really works. But all in all, I like it. And I know everyone is saying that they want more of the old crew, and of course we do. We want to see Aykroyd up there. We want to see Bill Murray. We want to see Ernie, and we do get them. They do have more screen presence than they did in the first film, and it's reassuring as we see Winston Zeddemore, a philanthropist, and it's fun to see the direction that the characters have been taken in. That totally makes sense. I mean, even Peter, makes sense. Even I don't know. Ackroyd's character seems, and I know that it was written this way, where he's a little bit upset that time has passed him by. That Ray has, as you know, in his twilight years, and he's in his golden age, and he should be retired. And there is that weight of time, of age, and it's relevant to the story. But it doesn't impede it. It actually kind of helps it along and gives it kind of a lighter, kind of like, oh, yeah, I can see that. The film itself, I know I'll see again. I know I'll add it to the library. And what happens next is anyone's guess. Jason Reitman has been quoted saying, I will be making these films as long as the fans want them. And none of the cast are shy about saying they'll come back. So now we wait. I know that there's an animated series that has been kicked around, and after the success of Ghostbusters, which I think unseated Dune as number one at the box office, and that's fine. I don't know what an animated series looks like. Dark Horse has produced a new comic series. Issue one just came out this last week with two variant covers, and I'm fine with it. I want to see where it goes. How they handle the franchise right now, I think, is crucial. It's not in its infancy, but the next few decisions are monstrous decisions. And where they take it and where it goes, only the fans know. My one issue, and this kind of leads into my next thing that we're going to tie this all up with, is the lack of a soundtrack. There's a moment in the film that completely was missing music. And I don't mean like instrumental soundtrack or stuff. I mean like a song, like a soundtrack, like Guardians of the Galaxy style music. And immediately when the scene happens, and I know you'll know it when you see it, there's a song that popped into my head from the original Ghostbusters film that, like, this is where that would totally fit. And it's not there. What happened to soundtracks? And I've noticed this is like a trend going on. And I don't... What happened? Is rock and roll dead? And it's an interesting question. And it's something that has kind of been on my mind over the last couple weeks now after seeing the Ghostbusters. Because as we were sitting there in the bar disseminating the film, all of us kind of had the same realization at the same moment of, there's no soundtrack. What happened to it? And I know the music industry is completely different and changed, and just watching things. And I saw the iHeartRadio Music Awards the other night, which I just kind of laughed, because I sat there for a moment and I thought, well, music's kind of dead. The process is broken. There are no, like, superstar bands. There are no legends being made today. I mean, sure, there's, you know, Taylor Swift. I've got nothing against the Swifties. Lady Gaga, absolutely. But the only band out of the last 10 years that I can maybe see making it to Stones level or Beatles level is like Mumford & Sons. You know, they bring a show. They have a presence. They are a band. But the single performers, I don't see them doing that. You have everybody clamoring right now to go out and see the tours that are happening, like Journey and Def Leppard are back on tour again. I mean, I remember seeing them in the 80s. And these epic bands that have stood the test of time, members are starting to fall off a little bit. And rightfully so, because... You again, passage of time, they've been around for quite a while. And it reminded me and it brought me back to an interview that I had seen. And of all people, it was Gene Simmons of Kiss. And his explanation is spot on, where he explains the downfall of the record industry and how it's affected the entire landscape for music. And I think we're starting to feel that now with soundtracks, because the one thing that I would always do at the end of a movie that I'm absolutely in love with or adore Guardians included, is go out and buy the soundtrack. But you can't go out and buy the soundtrack, especially when you have Target and Best Buys and all of these other retailers that have pulled back on physical media. They're gone. It's just not there. You have to go online to order it, and it's a digital thing. I understand. I'm in the digital age. I'm right with the technology, but I'm still tactile. I still want to touch something. And what happens when the internet goes down? Because it does go down. Or what happens when, you know, the system crashes? I can just put a disc into my player or put out the vinyl and just listen to it that way. Gene Simmons brings up a very interesting point of the lack of structure, that the music industry is not going to recover. You have individuals that are willing to steal and pirate other artists' work, take credit for them because they've already made their money and they should share it. I'm not for that kind of entrepreneurism at this time, to be honest with you. I mean, there's a difference between internet famous and famous and having talent and going out there. And there are some very interesting lines, and I don't know how the entertainment industry is going to advance. I don't know how the music industry is going to advance. I don't have that kind of vision. But as I'm looking at where I'm at right now, and as I see the landscape, and I listen to the lack and the vacuum and the radio, there it's just not there anymore. And it's almost kind of sad to me. The Willy Wonka film, and I brought this up, is supposed to be a musical. And it's kind of a musical, but I walked out of there not with a single song stuck in my head except for the original song that they kind of rehash. So it just kind of was, I don't know, a little lackluster. It made me sad because at the end of a film, I should be walking out of there with a song stuck in my head. Ghostbusters Afterlife did have a song. In fact, McKenna is the artist that did do the song. And there was kind of a song that was done by a K-pop band for Frozen Empire. But I don't even remember what it was. I couldn't even begin to tell you because wherever they put it, it has absolutely no impact. And that's what I kind of enjoy about Gunn's relationship with music and movies and how he integrates and infuses them to tell the story, to impact the viewer. And I'm afraid that we've gotten too far away from what has made us good in quest to make us better. That's heartbreaking. But I digress. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just out of touch. But I still consider myself kind of like plugged in for music. I still listen to, you know, what's coming out there. But, you know, the Billboard 100 just doesn't have the same impact that it once did. Especially when, you know, streaming, downloading, and all of that have run wild, chaotic wild in what is out there. And maybe this is what makes sense. Maybe this is how it's supposed to go. But I don't buy that. I don't see that. I don't think anyone wants that. So it really struck me funny, and this will be my final moment, is that the new Joker film, which will be premiering its trailer April 9th, is being billed as a musical, a jukebox musical. Todd Phillips originally thought this was just going to be a standalone film. But now has confirmed the sequel, and not only is it a sequel, but it is a musical. So I'm not sure how to take that, but everybody is going to be singing in this, and there is supposed to be at least 15 covers in this movie. The movie is scheduled to release October 4th of this year. And the trailer, when it hits, I will be sure to share that on the 5280 Geek Facebook page and on the website. But it leaves the question of, what do we expect? Is rock and roll dead? Is Gene Simmons right? Upon further review and deeper reflection, maybe. I'm curious what you think, because I just scratch my head. And on that bombshell, we shall say goodbye. We will be back. Come visit us. We will be at the All Seas Collector Expo this weekend. It's a free-to-attend event at the Arapahoe County Fairgrounds. I will be there. I don't know if any of the rest of the crew is going to be there. I think they get the weekend off. It's just yours truly rolling up to sling some books, MC some stuff, and just hang out with my fellow collecting nerds. But in the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind. Good night!